Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Back with another episode of Mouthing Off, the theater arts and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company. I'm Kevin Couchman here with my good friend out in New York City, Mari Sittner. How are you, Mari?
Doing good. We got back yesterday from the not so great state of Massachusetts.
Okay. Not so great. I grew up in Massachusetts.
Oh no! And our guest is coming in hot. This is Frederick. Wow. And is it mellow?
Mellow, right? You got it right.
Mellow. He's not going to be mellow. So Fred is a journalist with the Pioneer Press, just to start. You may be listening to this on 94.1 Frogtown Radio here in beautiful, historic St. Paul, Minnesota, or you might be consuming it as a podcast. Fred and I are moots on the Bird website, on Twitter, and I wanted him to come on to talk about how great Massachusetts is.
Yeah, right. I haven't lived there in 21 years.
We all agree Minnesota's better than Massachusetts.
Okay.
Definitely more friendly.
Boy. So Fred, let's get into it. What are the odds? There have been so many synchronicities this month for me and around me. It's been odd. Have either of you noticed that? Are the synchronicities picking up, or am I finally losing my last bit of wit?
Well, give me an example.
Okay. So I wrote two new plays this month. One is a full-length two-hander. One is a one-act two-hander.
Oh, wow.
Just today, I was talking about how the novel, as a form on Twitter, I was talking about how degenerate the novel is. How the novel has always been sort of seen as this waste of time. You know, when it first came out in the 16th, 17th century, there was a moral panic over the novel. All these young ladies are wasting their time reading these novels. And some guy replied with a copy of The Metamorphoses by Apuleius, which is this famous original sort of early example of a novelistic piece of writing. A copy of that book is in my new play. On stage. You see what I'm saying?
And now, the universe is saying something.
It's saying get a job, I think is what it's saying.
maybe that too.
But here we have another one. Mari brings up Massachusetts, starts to talk trash. They've just found somebody guilty in the murder of Tupac Shakur. Mari comes in hot and she starts trash talking your home state. What are the odds?
So I got booted from the Cape Cod Times in September 2004. And I landed on my sister's couch in Brooklyn, peeling potatoes. So I moved here from New York City when this job opened. I'd already been applying, you know, but I moved here from New York City. But I grew up in Boston and worked in Cape Cod for 3 years. So
What part of Boston? I was in Wakefield this weekend.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
So when people say, oh, yeah, I was in Boston, and they name a suburb like an hour outside.
I was not in Boston. I did not say that. I lived in Boston for 4 years. I would never say Wakefield is Boston.
The similarity between Boston and St. Paul is that Boston and St. Paul are both cities of neighborhoods. That if you're truly from St. Paul, you don't say St. Paul. You say, I'm an East Sider. I'm an old-time, you know, Frogtowner. I'm an old-time, you know, Highland Park resident, whatever. And the same is true in Boston. That you say, I'm from Southie, South Boston. I'm from Dorchester. I'm from, you know, you name your neighborhood before you name the city because it's very much, focused on that one rec center, that one park, that one hangout neighborhood bar. So in some ways, I feel very at home in St. Paul in that respect. But Very, very different cities in other words.
Well, let's give you a chance, I guess, to give your plugs right away. Where can people find your work? You're with the Pioneer Press. You're also on Twitter. And following in that, what have you been writing about lately?
So, yeah, I've been with the Pioneer Press 21 years. That's twincities.com. Anything that's not crime or restaurant, you know, or music news in St. Paul, probably I either wrote it or had a part of, piece in it for twincities.com. I need a sneeze. Ah.
Hey, that's all right.
Oh.
Whoa.
I got all my sin out right there.
Was it? Yeah, sure.
Let's see. What have I been writing about? I've been writing about homeless encampments. I've been writing about the new mayor. Melvin Carter was unseated by a woman named Callie Herr. She's gotten into a little bit of hot water lately with the police chief filing a sex harassment complaint against her. You don't see that very often.
Sure.
Been writing some real estate news. We may get, you know, Burnsville, all these suburbs, Roseville, have these indoor adventure parks where you can take your kids and do laser tag and trampolines and aids and ninja obstacle courses. We don't have anything like that, really. We may be getting our first one. University
Midway.
And Midway Shopping Center.
Mm-hmm.
Herberger's.
Cool. Yeah.
Lulu Adventureland.
Sure. I mean, we've got Can-Can Wonderland, but that's not the same thing. That's more for the adults, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a bar. That's a bar with an arcade and mini golf. What I'm talking about. Obstacle courses for kids.
Cool. All right. That is such a strange area, Midway. You know, it's
you're talking about my home right here. I'm sitting on Charles Avenue right now.
I'm not talking trash. But it is. It's very it's like a hodgepodge. It's this, it's that, it's another thing. You got Hamlin right there, you got the loons right there, you know, you got the light rail cutting through it, and then sort of these bunch of big retail, big box retail. It's just
I just feel like it's retail.
Yeah. So what's your
every street, every block's different. I mean, I organize the national night out, you know, the potluck on my street every August. And you go to the next national night out potluck and it's totally different, mix of people, foods, you name it. Because Hamlin living, I'm right between Hamlin University and what had been Walmart. So are, you know, go two blocks in any direction, I'm in a very different environment. I took my son around and beautiful old buildings and some new buildings. And we went to the top of one where we got a great view of, you know, the Hamlin Church or the Methodist churches near campus. Beautiful and very totally opposite environment of, you know, the panhandlers that were kind of invading Cub Foods until it closed.
You know what it is that area, and I don't mean this in a punitive way necessarily, but that area is the most Houston-like area of St. Paul. If you've ever been to Houston, Texas, it's like frenetic in terms of zoning, as in there is none. So there'll be like a barbershop, a little corner grocery, a house, a quad, an apartment, a vape shop, and that's all one block. You've driven for 20 seconds and that's what it is, you know, and that area kind of has qualities like that. You know, you've got the brutalist Lutheran church and then you know what I mean? So, yeah, but it's got there's a lot of life over there. I might be going over to my first Loons game here soon.
Oh, you got to go.
Yeah. Okay.
So before the game, you got to start drinking at the Blackheart.
All right.
The Blackheart Bar.
Okay. All right.
And then after the game, maybe the Midway Saloon.
Okay.
they've both done a very good job, very different environments, very different crowds, but they've both done a very good job of kind of celebrating the lunacy. You know, I love them both. I mean, even the owners, they'll just sit down and talk to me and talk
How's the food? Is the food all right?
It's bar food, you know. Yeah. I'd say that it's evolved. Midway Saloon has like a little, it opened a little hole in the wall next to, and opened a pizza store next door. So you can actually just like not even leave your bar stool and they'll bring in the pizza to you or the chicken wings or whatever you're getting. So
I'm all about the wings. I like this, that we're going to get a play center. As a parent in Minnesota and in the United States, it's just often so distressing how few public spaces are really adequate for children.
Yeah.
You know, it's really, really tough. And so the more spaces like that, the better.
Well, I think more important, more, you know, just as importantly, even if you don't have kids, like there's one, two, there's six things coming online between those two former shopping centers. Someone's looking at the Cub Foods to maybe do an Asian grocery. there. It's a model that's been really popular on the East Coast, where it's like half restaurants, half grocery.
Oh yeah.
There's four buildings that the team owner, Dr. Bill McGuire, is building, and he's actually building them now. He's been talking about them since the stadium opened in 2019, but now he's got a hotel, a parking ramp, an office building, and then two restaurant like pavilions that
Great.
Would and they're all kind of making a little campus right there.
Is your so one thing I've been telling people, because I am a St. Paulite. Not native, but it's my adopted town. I grew up in North Dakota, moved out to the here for the U. I had family in still have family in Minneapolis. You know, East Side downtown. That's those are my haunts. And you know, I've been telling people it's like it does feel like St. Paul hit bottom and is now kind of more it feels like more things are opening than closing now. And does it feel the same to you? You're kind of out there, you're doing journalism.
Yeah, with a big caveat, a little big asterisk in the corner, but yes, overall, yes. They tore down that godforsaken CVS at Snellingen University. I mean, I once counted 40 panhandlers outside of there and or just loiterers. I mean, it was an open-air drug market.
Yeah,
it was not safe. It was not safe for the people hanging out there. It was not safe for people walking by. So they finally tore it down. I really think things like that kind of hurt the previous administration. People were going, are you on this or not? And now, how quickly will something come in to replace it? I know Dr. McGuire, the same owners of the team, people in the neighborhood, they have their gripes with him. I think there's days he could have throttled me after reporting on some of his setbacks. But it looks like he's still in negotiation to you know, get control of that land and build some market rate apartments there. A lot of people in the neighborhood now, even some of his former critics, were like, let him cook. Just, you know, just give him whatever permits he needs. Get behind him. Get out of his way. Just it's time. I mean, the stadium opened in 2019. I can think of like two Chinese restaurants. One was more sit down and there were lobsters in a big tank and one was more fast food. All of that's gone. I mean, all of those small businesses by the Midway Shopping Center just gone. The McDonald's is gone. So it's just kind of looking barren. We've lost a lot. We hit bottom, like you said. Now we're finally seeing some movement. I would say a lot of the housing we're seeing coming online right now is subsidized. That there's some level of taxpayer support in there. There's a couple different kinds of ways to back housing. But, you know, on the east side, like you mentioned, you've got a former golf course that was around for years and years and years. It's now housing, but it's Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity housing. So it's highly, highly subsidized. I mean, they're using all kinds of grant dollars.
Well, if there's anywhere to put the subsidized apartments in the Twin Cities, it's along the light rail path. I mean, that just seems like a no-brainer to me. I've always sort of eyeballed that area and have said, you know, this, what's going to happen here? What's this going to look like in 2030, 2040? So I'm very curious to see, especially with the balloons being there, the MLS being there. It just
I got a wife and kids walking in the room right now.
That's all right. Hi, wife.
Hey, hi, guys.
Hello. You're on the radio. You're on
They're
old
on the radio.
Radio. You're listening They're to famous. 94.1 FM Frogtown Radio. Yeah, for Bad Mouth Theater Company. This is Mouthing Off.
Awesome. So just as an aside, I married a Frogtown woman.
Okay.
So she's been a Frogtowner for a long time. So I moved her over to Hamlin Very Midway good. On the other side of Lexington Parkway.
All right.
She just said, I moved you to St. Paul. So I was in Minneapolis.
Ah, okay. Yeah. See, people who are listening to this from the Twin Cities understand this internecine rivalry between neighborhoods and the cities. One of my favorite things is it doesn't happen so often anymore, but when you go to a show down here at the arena and the act comes out and says, hello, Minneapolis, and everybody boos.
Yeah.
You got to know what town you're in. Come on.
Yeah. Put
it, yeah, exactly. So, Fred, I want to – what's it like having a job for 21 years? That doesn't happen to people anymore. So you must be doing something right. So that's one question, and then I'm going to have a follow-up, and I'll let you answer that first.
It's an enormous point of pride and responsibility and frustration. So when I joined the Pioneer Press – there were 235 people in the newsroom. We had multiple cartoonists. We had you know, whatever, like editors on top of editors and writers on top of editors. We were in teams. Like I was the Dakota County team. So I covered Farmington, Hastings. Eventually they moved me to Eagan. I covered the county board. I covered crime. And there were like six other people on our team and news assistants. We are not 235 people anymore. We're 30. So I've seen 200 people walk out the door, you know, mostly retirements, some every few years, some layoffs, but mostly departures and contract buyouts. That's frustrating. That's hard to be kind of almost recreating a startup atmosphere where everyone jumps in and everyone says, oh, I've got an idea. I can do this. And just, you know, not a lot of rings to kiss. I remember when I started saying, I've got an, you know, there's people in Dakota County who want me to write about how cuts at the state level are impacting them. And they'd be like, nope, that's a state story. You cover county stuff, not state stuff. You know, too many rings to kiss, too many hoops to jump through. My sense is a larger employer across the river, I won't name which one, is still kind of like that. We're not. It's very much more organic, much more like, can you get this done? What do you, you know, let's get out of your way. Let me let you cook. I love startups. I've worked for several startups. My daughter's like, he said, let you cook. And she gave me this face like, what? Yeah, I know the lingo. I'm that cool. But yeah, I mean, it, you know, so yes, it's been good. We're like a family, you know, it's not a group of workers. It's a group of people who have, you know, lived together. You know, there was a columnist on our staff for years named Ruben Rosario. And when he passed away, he was very public about his cancer battles over the course of years, over the course of probably all 20 years that I was there. And when he eventually died, we all went to his funeral and just a number of people that were there. I mean, statesmen. And, and I think at least one U.S. senator was there. It was really much like a family coming together. I forget everything else you asked me.
No, it was just one question. Thank you. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me, but it's also kind of amazing. I mean, what is just like 10% are left from when you started, maybe if, you know, something like that.
I'm having fun. Wild.
Yeah, it sounds like you are. I mean, and I see you on the timeline. That's how we got connected. So when you first moved to Minnesota, what was the biggest culture shock for you? What do you remember about kind of moving to Minnesota and becoming a Minnesota in the capacity of being a journalist?
Because yeah, going to the pizza shop and saying, thanks for the slice. Can I have some oregano? And just a blank look on that clerk's face going, what? I said, oregano. It's what you put on pizza, lady. And then
too spicy for Minnesotans.
So I was at one point in Uptown. And I was at another pizza shop. I love pizza. I don't necessarily love pizza in Minnesota. People are going to start booing, but
no. You know,
pizza is a very particular thing to a lot of people. And I was at another pizza shop and I asked the waiter, I'm like, can you get me some oregano? And he just a look on his face, just double. He's like, what? And I'm like, oregano, it's what you do. And so he comes back with this. It was like a vase. It was like a bucket of, he brought out like $30 worth of oregano just for me. So there's a little disconnect. I mean, we're not that far from Chicago, and yet it's a very much a culture that's been informed by, you know, my neighbor. He takes his two kids and he puts them in Norwegian class through I think Concordia Language Villages, and then they go visit the grandparents in Norway. And I've seen those pictures; they're amazing. I'm itching for him to invite me. But it's very much informed by some of those cultural bonds historically. And then you have this overlay, this kind of more recent Hmong experience, an East African experience, a little bit of Nigerian experience. I'm very partial to Ethiopian restaurants, so I can tell you where kind of all the Ethiopian community is. It's an interesting mix, and it's a very different mix than I think Boston is right now or Chicago is right now. I've lived in two of the biggest Hmong enclaves, and I married a Hmong woman. So I'm around the culture 24/7. Every weekend there's an event. And it's great. It's really been family oriented. My wife has 10 siblings. Yeah. They all have kids. Her dad and his brother married two sisters. It was like two brothers marrying two sisters. So one side of the kids, the other had eight. So those 19 kids were raised as siblings. She's the third oldest. And so, yeah, there's not a moment where I'm not in the Hmong ceremony. I'm loving it, though.
That's great, man. Yeah, my mom came from a big family, and I have cousins all over the place. There was a couple years ago, there was the white kid from North Dakota, from Devil's Lake, on the Alabama team for basketball that went to the Final Four, and Facebook just lit up, and everybody was like, "That's your cousin." I'm
Oh,
like,
really?
"Oh, hey, cuz.
That's
All right, cool.
wild.
That's so funny. I guess I'm cheered for Alabama now, you know." So that, you know, but yeah, that
Yeah.
kind of family is incredible. Chatting with a Hmong woman over on Payne at her business, and we were chatting, and she was talking about being at like a family reunion that weekend, and she's like, "Yeah, there
Yeah.
were 200 people there."
Oh, yeah. That,
That
yeah.
diff that's wild, 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 wild. Okay, so I let's and Murray, if you want to get in, just pop in. But what is the biggest story right now in St. Paul, you know, that you're covering or have covered, like this summer? What's the standout story for you?
I'm struggling with that one because there's three.
Well, let's get three then.
Yeah, I think this issue with the homeless encampments is not going away. There were three large homeless encampments. The mayor's in July 8th or so, the mayor said, "I'm going to give in 1 month, we're clearing the biggest one by Pig's Eye, by Fish Hatchery Road on the east side in Dane's Bluff." About 130 people there. And I mean, there were people storming out of meetings, like Zoom meetings, like just saying, "I quit this meeting," you know, elected state representatives going, "Don't do this." And they did it. And maybe 100 of those 120, 130, 140 people just moved to the next encampment that they were going to clear, which is Randolph
What
Avenue,
else are
Shepherd
they
Road.
going to do?
So, you know, I mean, they put like $1 million, maybe 2 million into opening up new shelter beds and trying to contract shelters, but that's first come, first serve. The next night you're not there by 8:30 curfew or whatever. You don't want to abide by an 8:30 curfew. You're out on the street. So people have community, they follow their feet, they follow where they're safe, they follow their partners, their pets. Some people have substances, a lot of people have mental health, as you know, everybody's got a mental health thing, but some people it's chronic. That Randolph Avenue one grew by 100 people. So it's like you said you were going to clear all three. What happens when you clear the Randolph one? Where do all those people go? And that's almost an existential like crisis. As this was happening, the news broke that the police chief was accusing the mayor of sex harassment. And people were going, "Is this, you know, really like big tough cops? Kind of, you know, she's a small Hmong woman. Like, what did she do?" And we don't entirely know yet. We don't have that, you know, the list of accusations. Excuse me.
Yeah.
When I turn the fan on, the dust goes
Oh, you're all right.
places I don't want to talk about. But so there's a little bit of like, is this just pushback because of the third big story, which is the budget? And a couple weeks later, she came out with her budget, August 8th, and it's like closing the Dayton's Bluff Library. Tearing down the Conway Rec Center. I mean, just a series of things. There's another rec center on the east side that would just have after school programming, but you couldn't just like come in and play basketball. It would just be
It's
open for.
not the one by near Phelan, is it? Because that's
No,
our area. No, different one.
I don't think so.
Okay, all right.
But you know, I mean, this is going to be, and it's not a done deal. The city council gets to weigh in, and people have their campaigns. But this is going to be a rock'em sock'em budget season all the way into December. So those three, they're all kind of interconnected. You know, what you do for the homeless encampments affects your budget. And obviously the cops are pushing back on some budget stuff. And maybe that's part of the sex harassment complaint. Maybe it's not. But yeah.
You're in the Wire Upper Midwest Op edition here. You're living it.
I think so. This summer, yeah.
Huh.
But I mean, Operation Metro Surge, like, that never really went away. Those arrests are still happening in different parts of the state, and we're still kind of in the aftermath of that and recovering from that.
I got to tell you a story about that real quick, just my own observations, and then I want to hear your take on it. You know, we have a little house over by Lake Phelan, and then I come down here and I work, and this is like my office. And right when that kicked off, I saw a traffic stop on 7th coming, or yeah, it was on 7th coming off of Payne, 7th toward downtown. I saw the traffic stop and I said, somebody's going to get killed. Wow. I just said, I mean, I should have tweeted it because then I'd have proof. But that was my first thought, was somebody's going to die here. This is just not, it's so obvious. You know, there's so many guns in play. Everybody's on edge. It's the middle of winter. Everybody's cold. And lo and behold, you know, I think it was like literally the next day or 2 days later it happened. So what's going on with that? You're saying that it really hasn't stopped, just the coverage, the sort of national coverage has faded away?
Yeah, I mean, I think in places like LA, it's still pretty hot. And just different parts of the country have heated up at different times. Who was it? Sahan Journal or the Star Tribune? Somebody had a story recently saying in Minnesota, it's become much more concentrated in terms of picking people up when they get out of jail. That if someone's an immigrant and, you know, just on a green card or something, and they've been arrested and they get out of jail, then ICE swoops in right there and makes an arrest. That kind of thing. It's more targeted. It's not block to block in South Minneapolis grabbing people based on skin color anymore. Because that didn't work. That was awful for
obviously,
everyone.
Obviously, they were
including the ICE agents. I mean, the ICE agents weren't safe in that situation. I mean, I think there's more to come. But if you look nationally, the arrests and deportations have not slowed at all. They're still at record pace and record numbers.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's electioneering and kind of, you know, it's an election year, so there's a lot of weird media distortion. I wanted to ask, so when did you go to J school? How did you get into this this business?
They did not offer journalism in my college. I started doing the high school paper. I did the campus radio station. I did a commercial radio station that was affiliated with my college in Providence, Rhode Island. My dad was a journalist in the Dominican Republic. My family's Dominican. And so I grew up, you know, reading the Boston Globe on his lap and reading the Spider-Man comics while he's critiquing the Globe or whatever. But he was a lifelong fan. He did radio and newspaper in Spanish language publication, which don't pay anything. But I grew up around it. You know, it was kind of in my blood. Did journalism as much as I could in college without being able to study it because they didn't really offer it. And then just kind of learned by doing. I went down to Costa Rica after college. I interned at the Boston Globe in 1999 when the internet was young on their website. I went down to Costa Rica to study Spanish for 3 months, and I kept extending my travel more and more. And I ended up spending 9 months down there. Just kind of freelancing, the Boston Globe, Denver Post. There's like a little nothing travel paper run by a corrupt German guy named Heinrich down there. So that was my day-to-day sustenance, is working for Heinrich, writing puff pieces about hotels and restaurants. And I came back, started working for weeklies in Boston. And then I did that for a couple of years. Then the Cape Cod Times for 3 years. Lost my job, ended up on my sister's couch in Brooklyn. And then this job opened up and I've been here ever since.
Wild. Yeah, Mari.
Well, what I'm really curious about is the very first, if you go to TwinCities.com, you look at the Pioneer Press, the very first line of your bio is that you were once sued by a reader for $2 million and kept on writing. And you keep saying you lost your job. Maybe these are connected. Are these connected?
No, not at all.
Really?
Not at all. Yeah, not at all. No, so yeah, that was wild. There was a Ponzi scheme in the Twin Cities, and it was around the downturn of 08. And these guys would take people to the Van Dusen mansion in Minneapolis and take them on a tour and say, everyone's losing money, I can make you money. Look at this almost like a ticket counter, like these numbers going down this neon screen, electronic screen. And we're taking money and we're converting it into the Japanese yen, we're converting it into euros, and then it comes back to dollars. And in a matter of minutes, a dollar becomes a dollar, 25, you know, just stupid schemes, stupid, stupid schemes. One of them was to get a guy, I think he was based in Burnsville. He was like 78 years old. And he had a Jesus wants you to make money. If you pray hard with me, I'll make you rich. Just give me all your money. He had this, you know, I'm not against praying hard. I am against fleecing little old ladies on the radio out of all their money. Everyone who invested in him lost everything. It went to these guys who owned and controlled the Van Dusen mansion. So the feds went after all three guys, the radio host and the two dudes in the mansion. The radio host, the 78-year-old guy, sued everyone who wrote a story. He sued the intern at the Star Tribune. He sued, you know, the reporters at the Star Tribune. He sued the Business Journal. He sued me. So I woke up one day and I had an email from the editor-in-chief, Tom Flatting, at the time. I was living in Uptown. And it said, "Don't worry, Fred, we'll take care of it." But it didn't say what it was. I didn't know I'd been sued. He never like presented me with papers or anything. So I thought I had like an incurable cancer or something. And like somehow my boss knew before I did. So I'm like, "What is it that you're taking care of?" I'm freaking out. And then I found out he was representing himself in federal court. And I'm like, okay, I can sleep like a baby. I'm fine. So make a long story short, that lawsuit was not, it was a big nothing burger.
Yeah. But still, when you find out about it, you get a little frog in your throat, don't you?
I never had to step into a courtroom. I was very happy.
Very, very good. In all your time with the Pioneer Press, what's the biggest story you've covered or the most memorable?
You know, it was pretty early on in my career, actually. There were these two young dudes. I used to cover homicide. That was a big part of what I did when I covered Dakota County. And there were these two young dudes. They went to a private Lutheran school. I think it was in Stillwater. One of them lived in Hastings. I forget where the other guy lived. Matt Nedry. It was Nedry and his buddy. I'm forgetting the buddies. But Nedry's parents, right on Main Street, this quaint little Main Street in Hastings, they had a Red Wing shoe store. And they had an auto body glass store. They had like a series of businesses they owned. And Matt and his buddy said, you know, the night before prom, let's just go over there and kill them. And they hired a third young dude they met at a gas station. And they made too much noise. They decided not to do it that night. They go home. Next morning, they get shotguns. They go to the auto body shop. They shoot mom. She runs outside. They shoot dad. Mom runs back in to finish off mom. They go home, they get changed, they get into their prom gear, and they pick up their dates and head off to prom, having just killed Matt's parents. And you know, I mean, they were arrested the same day. There's broad daylight shootings. And on the stand, they were, each kid was like, "It wasn't my idea, it was his." You know, they had separate kind of court appearances. And just no remorse, just, "I would never have thought of this. It was all his fault." And I'm just looking there, and, you know, I just remember Matt Nedry's brother was there. They were both adopted from different families, so he didn't look at all like him, but he was still, you know, the son of these two murdered parents, and he's just shaking his head like, "What am I, you know, my brother just killed my parents, like, what the heck is this?" And to this day, I don't think we'll ever know. I mean, it's just an act of evil. Nancy Grace was she's kind of, you know, one of these crime news anchors. So she had me on talking about that crime. And I think I did a couple of their media spots, and I didn't really know what to say. I mean, people would ask me like, "What was their motive?" It's like, no, they're like, they didn't have a motive. They just, it just got into their head. Turns out they had told the whole class in advance. They were bragging about it. Everyone was like, "Oh, this is fun." So they would meet in a cave. There was like a hangout, I think, in Stillwater. Called the Cave, and they would all meet, and they would, you know, one of the boys.
He's cutting out a little bit. We'll see if he comes back. That's all right. What a story. I want to ask him how he processes these things. Can you imagine? I mean, I remember I was called, Mari, when I was living in New York. I was called for jury duty, and the first one was like a molestation case, and then the second one was in a bigger room. And the first thing the judge said was, "If you don't have at least 6 weeks, you can leave."
Well, that was what my case was like too.
Yeah. Did you actually serve?
Yeah, I did 5 weeks.
Okay. I remember that now. I remember that now. Fred come back.
Yeah, but let's go ahead. See if he can come back. No, it was a,
He'll come back. Don't worry about it, Mark.
We'll be able to edit this.
We're theater people.
We're good. We'll be able to edit this.
But you were dealing with like a murder case.
So it was an attempted murder drive-by. But they, instead of getting their target, they shot a 4-year-old in the leg.
Oh.
And we had to listen to the 911 call like 4 times.
Oh.
It was horrible. Nobody was prepared.
Oh.
Because we didn't really know what the case was.
Oh my.
Before getting in there, they were like, "It's an attempted murder."
Right.
"It might be a little disturbing." Whatever. But it was honestly, our case was kind of funny because the kid is fine. He ended up okay.
Oh, well, thank God.
Nobody was killed. The kid is fine. This happened years ago. And it was just the hijinks. The hood hijinks are crazy. Joe loves this. Joe, I'm telling him the name of the guy.
You're telling all the Frogtown radio people the name of the
telling
guy.
Telling all the Frogtown radio people.
Yeah, we're.
Oh, this is, I this was is, like, this I'm not going to say. I'm not going to say the name of this guy if this is going okay. out over the radio.
Oh, it's going. I'm not editing anything, Mari. You're getting this. Is the
then
real
I'm not
deal.
Saying the name of the guy, right, but Kevin, I'll right. tell you, I heard the best okay. name of a guy I've ever heard.
Okay, you save it for
when I
after.
Did jury duty.
Okay.
In
okay.
New York City.
Yeah. Cool. Listen to this. I found the story that he was talking about. Assistant Carver County Attorney, and this is from 2006. Peter Ivey called it the ultimate betrayal, a son plotting to kill his parents for life insurance money. Hey, Fred's back. Don't worry about it. It looks like maybe your computer went out there, Fred.
It's like twice a day over here. I got to get Comcast over here.
It's all good, man. It's all good.
Sorry.
You're higher deaf now, too. So.
No,
we okay. were good.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Good.
So yeah. you were in the middle of telling us this story about this awful case, and yeah. Do you want to finish?
No, I mean, that was just they were just totally unrepentant on the stand, and obviously they got life in prison. I mean, Hastings has had like one homicide in the history of the town, and it was just very bizarre, very small kind of river whistle stop town. You know, you expect to see a train pull in, going all aboard. You know, very. Kind of cute town and not what anyone was accustomed to down
yeah.
there.
Yeah. And they got life, but they were 17.
Yeah.
They were tried as adults.
Yeah. This is 20 years ago now. So,
sure.
You know, no or worries. 15 years ago. But I think they were tried as adults.
Jeez. Yeah. That's so tragic. I mean, you know, I can be a little bit mystical, you know, and stuff like this kind of just, I just look at it and I go, just evil exists in the world, you know, and sometimes two young men, boys, they start gassing each other up and then it becomes kind of like a game of chicken. Am I going to go through with it? Or are you going to go through with it? You know, I've been thinking a lot lately about AI psychosis.
Yeah.
If you have any counselors or psychiatrists or whatever therapists in your who you talk to, ask them about it. I was chatting with a friend today and she said, oh, yeah, we're seeing a lot of it. And it's people who are already on edge or they're on drugs or they have like a condition and they get on ChatGPT and the thing is just designed to affirm people. And the delusions sort of develop and spin out of control. You know, you hear these crazy stories about people who, like the AI just hallucinates a fake boyfriend. And and before you know it, they're going to locations to try to meet this fake boyfriend. I mean, it's just deranged.
I've read about it a little bit. I mean, people saying like, I think I'm godlike. And the AI is going, that's great that you're getting into your god era. That's amazing. Wow. How spiritual are you? And they're like, I can jump off a roof. And they're like, wow, how athletic. You're, you know, keep going with that. You know? And it's like, nope,
right.
That's not what you want me to hear.
No.
There's a really great like 4-hour YouTube video of this guy who tried to induce AI psychosis in himself by trying to have the AI convince him that he was a genius as a baby.
Mm.
And then doing whatever the AI said to get back to the genius baby state. Really funny. Really sure, great. Just... It tells you to do some really insane and wacky things.
Yeah. If you're already on edge, that's not worth looking into. That's what I would say. Just, you know, talk to some human. Talk to humans.
Well, also, speaking of being on edge, I mean, we were talking about this when you cut out, but obviously not every story is, you know, a double homicide or something horrible. But do you feel like you are able to compartmentalize getting into the weeds of so much bad news and having to, because you turn out a lot of content, you write a lot of stories as you have to as a journalist. Do you feel that you're able to like compartmentalize all of the bad news that you have to get deep in the weeds of, or is it still tough?
I think it's still tough, but I don't cover crime anymore, really. I mean, Operation Metro Surge, I think we all had a role in that, you know. Big things like the pandemic or the back in the day, the 35W bridge collapse. We all had a role in that. But for the most part, I'm looking at like zoning reports. You know, I'm looking at, are they going to let Lulu Adventureland, you know, the zoning for that site limits indoor recreation to 40,000 square feet. Lulu Adventureland wants to be 70,000 square feet. You know, 8:30 on a Friday morning, I wasn't, you know, suffering like the trauma of that discussion, maybe the tedium of that discussion. But it was still kind of interesting to me because I wanted to see how it went. And they were more like, why is this limit even here? So, you know, I find that kind of interesting, you know, from urban planning. I get to cover a lot of things I would never be good at myself, like urban planning or local city politics. So there's a lot coming at me. There's little panic moments. And then there's also just me like jumping from thing to thing. And I think that's my personality anyway. I look back in college, I was not the best student, but I was at every guest speaker. You know, there's somebody would be visiting campus and I'd be like front row, like what do you say next? Or like a famous novelist. And I'd never read any of his works, but I knew the name and I just wanted to like find out more. So, yeah, I think I've been able to synthesize a lot. They say journalism is a mile wide and an inch thick, an inch deep. I try to get more than an inch of depth, but sometimes it's, you know, you do what you can.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a friend out in Los Angeles who actually has a really similar job. She writes about like business real estate deals in LA. And it's obviously not really what she dreamed about covering, but you do find something interesting in it. And I think it is really valuable. And you can sort of get a better idea of the way that your city functions by looking at all of these kind of tedious things.
You know, some of my most popular social media posts have been things I never even wrote about. You know, I was outside the state fair and I just took video of all of the cars parked on people's lawns. I mean, one guy had 10 like Bronco trucks, like just on his lawn. Everyone rents out their lawn space when they're on that same street, when basically on Snelling Avenue, facing the fair. And it's like $60 for one of these spots. Some are 40. I think the cheapest I found was like a ways away, maybe 20 in like someone's backyard. But so I just tweeted that out. I'm like, I would not pay $60 for this. 20 maybe, but not 60. And just the amount of vitriol on Twitter. Like, I didn't even say you can't do it. I didn't even say this is illegal, which it probably is. But I just said 60 is a little steep to get my car like on your lawn, dude. And people going, property rights, it's private property rights. And I'm like, yeah, I you know, I'm just totally saying, I'm not giving the guy $60.
Right. It's my $60.
Exactly. Property rights, my 60. Yeah. People are like 2 days later, people are still swearing at me on there, yelling at me. I'm like, I just want you to see what I see. Like, I'm not judging it. I'm not calling the cops or anything. And frankly, it's Snelling Avenue. I think the cops have seen it.
They're familiar.
It's not a secret.
Yeah. Well, the Minnesota State Fair is a vortex that creates an alternate reality for two to 3 weeks every summer, which I avoid like I would unnecessary dental work. I stay away, far away. I've seen it. I don't need to go again. Mari's shaking her head.
Every year a new animal is born. You think you've seen it, but you haven't seen it. Last time I went, they thought that the cow was going to give birth to one cow, and it gave birth to two. Okay. So
I did miss Weird Al Yankovic, which that's a bummer.
He got good reviews. He's still rocking. Yeah. He's not a spring chicken, and he's still bringing the joy and the fun that we need.
I think he got a lot of young people into music. I remember back in the day, it was his heyday when I was young, and that was, for some kids, that was like the first music they really got into. And then they were like, wait a minute, Michael Jackson is good too. You know, it's like, you know, so he's served a real public service, I would say. You've been to the fair this year then, Fred?
I have not. My wife went Friday night. My daughter's going tomorrow night. And then I think I'm going to see if I can shove my son off on his favorite aunt and uncle. Mm. And maybe I avoid the crowds entirely this year. I might be with you this year, you know, but I say it every year and somehow people are like, hey, we're going, come on. And I'm like, oh,
I took my little daughter, my 4-year-old daughter, to her first baseball game. We went to see the Saints. We made it 3 innings. She did really well.
That's great.
No meltdowns. It was a Sunday day game, and that was enough people for me.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
I think when you add the heat, and the crowds, it's record crowds. It's like painful crowds. I get really woozy in the heat. It just, you know, it's just like, it just sounds miserable. I hate to be down on the fair.
We're not, I'm not going to, right. We don't need the hate mail. We don't.
No.
We're not. No. I'm not here to yuck your yum. Okay.
Yeah.
Go in and have a great time. But
when it's 88 degrees, it's tough.
Yeah, and you're dragging kids along, and yeah, so in any event. But go have a great time at the fair. Go spend $60 on parking. Tell them that Badmouth Theater Company sent you. Speaking of theater, Fred, do you ever get over to the Hive, kind of over in your area? You know, the Hive Collective?
I walk by the Hive on a weekly basis. I love to take my wife and kids and go for a night walk, and we look at all the plays we've never seen. And we should see one of those one day. Yeah. I haven't been inside the theater in probably over 10 years. Yeah. And I kick myself over that. And I almost went. They got in touch with me a couple weeks ago and said, hey, we have this play, and it's here for the next 10 days, 12 days, whatever. And I said, let me see if I can make it work. And I was emailing back and forth and couldn't make it work.
Yeah, no worries.
But I chronicled when the ownership changed hands.
Yeah.
Because there's a tunnel kind of structure that connects the theater to the house. Mm-hmm. So the owners of the theater live at the theater in mm-hmm. a house that adjoins it. That is very cool to have in my neighborhood.
They've been on the pod. They're friends of ours. We did
great.
My last play we did there.
What was your last play?
It's called Moderation. It's about social media content moderators losing their minds at work. And it's available from Broadway Play Publishing. So you look up Moderation, Broadway Play Publishing. You can get a copy. And we did it here with the great Matt Sachs and Amanda Forstrom, who's the third co-host of this show. And then it went on and we did a production in London, too.
That's amazing. You know, the Playwright Center moved into St. Paul from Minneapolis.
I do. I was a fellow at the Playwright Center many, many years ago. I love that old location, that old churchy location.
Yeah, in Minneapolis.
I need to see the new one. It's on University, isn't it?
I will go with you because it's a little bit off of University, but yeah, it's kind of off University. Kind of near the Raymond area. And it's big. It's a nice big structure, kind of tucked away a little bit south of University Avenue. And I used to go years ago when they were in South Minneapolis just to see some writers I knew who were putting together, they were called the Ewoks, like emerging writers of color.
I remember when that kicked off.
And the Ewoks, and it was just so fun to see them really experimenting with scenes, and each person would get like 10 minutes to do 10 minutes of their play, and really being at the inception. It was like seeing a rock band, that the Beatles before they were famous. I felt like I was in the room.
That's so cool. Well, it's funny you bring it up because it's been a few years since I have written anything new. And Mari, I know you sent me your new script. So I'm excited to read that, but I finished like two plays this month. I wrote a new full length, and then I wrote a one act, and I've been meaning to write a one act for our friend Amanda, a one woman show, one person show, one act. And I started writing it and it became a two-hander. So it needs two actors. I don't know how to write a one person show. I don't know how to do it. So in any event, so I'm excited about that. But it's funny you bring up the Playwright Center, because now I'm going to have to start logging in there again to, like, I got just their opportunity board alone. And this will dovetail nicely into a question I have for you, but just for anybody out there who's going, what the heck? What do you mean you're a playwright? What do you mean you're a playwright? Well, go to the Playwright Center. It's pwcenter.org. If you do nothing else and you want to be a baby playwright, you've never written a play, and you could be 70 years old or 17, go there and just look at the opportunities board, because it'll give you a sense of who's looking for scripts. And I got full-blown productions in New York City off of the Playwright Center's opportunity.
Amazing.
You know, and I don't want to give, I don't want to give people the impression that that happens every day, because it does not. But just the fact that, like, somebody posted there, I sent it away to New York, and then 4 months later, I was in New York City, like,
doing
you know what I mean? So they provide a critical service. They're amazing. And I want to reconnect with them. And frankly, if anybody from the Playwright Center is listening to this, email us, badmouthtc@gmail.com. We want to talk to artists, and that goes to anybody, business owners, creators, artists, theater, music. We're talking to a friend of mine who does taiko drumming. He's like Taiko Arts Midwest. So, you know, these are easy. Aren't you having a good time, Fred? It's so easy.
I'm having a great time. And you know what? You're making me think of the Fringe Festival, because I just went to see these 1 hour shows. They do 104 different shows. In they each perform like five times, I think, in 10 or 11 days. And the French, it just wrapped up. It was in Minneapolis. And I think I saw six or seven shows. And four of the six were one man performances. I don't think there was any one woman performances this year. I've seen some in the past, but they're all one man performances. And mm-hmm. it's tough. You gotta have some cojones to get up there and just carry a show for an hour alone. Yeah. But the ones that did it well, I was just like, wow, I'm so glad I saw that.
Yeah, a good one-person show is amazing. I know what I'm going to do when I finally try to write one again. First, I'm going to find 7 credible one-person show scripts, and then I'm just going to read them, and then I'm going to reread them, and then I'm going to just like subconsciously rip them off because great artists steal. So, Fred, I want to ask you, so maybe we got maybe 7-8 more minutes here before we have to wind down. On all of that, talking about the Playwright Center and advice, you made your way into journalism and into, you know, a career.
Yeah.
Without J school, you found your way. So 2 questions here. What is your sort of philosophy of journalism, the type of journalism you do? And what advice would you give to a young person who's maybe demoralized right now, thinking there's no future in this? Those 2 questions. Yeah.
Yeah. My philosophy of journalism: news is what's new. You know, people want to know what the latest thing is. Even if you're writing about it, you know, I write about a lot of topics that are well tread. I mean, homelessness, it's not like it's never been touched on. The rent control, real estate, it's not like it's never been touched on, but people really want to know what the latest is. So, you know, hit them with what's new. Why should I care about this? And what's, if people only skim this, what's the one thing I want them to take away from this? My other philosophy of journalism is, you know, I'm writing for, like, remember your audience. I'm writing for my neighbors. I'm writing for my family, for my friends, for people I'm going to see at the rec center. It's the St. Paul Pioneer Press. I'm writing for St. Paul people first, and then some critic on Twitter like last. And then my sources and elected officials and kind of people that other journalists try to keep happy. I do a really bad job of keeping those people happy because that's not who I'm writing for. What would I say to a young person? I teach a class at the U, and I fear for them because I just showed up at a job fair and saw a booth of weekly papers in Boston, and like a few weeks later I was working for them. And that's harder now. I would say look at how many emerging online news sources there are that you may not even be aware of, because it's not a print edition like City Pages used to be, or the Village Voice in New York used to be, or the Boston Phoenix. It's now the Sahan Journal, the Reformer, the right wing Alpha News, the left wing. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of online publications that you may not even be aware of that will publish you. And some of them are like desperate for young people to knock on their door. I had undergrads that I hooked up with Racket MN, and Racket was started by four people who used to be writers for City Pages. And Racket MN is doing, you know, real fun kind of alt weekly work online. But you don't trip across it in a coffee shop. You don't trip across it at a bus stop or in the men's room. It's not, you know, sitting in a stack anymore. So that lack of visibility for all of these new online ventures, I think, is hurting them a little bit. We're still published 7 days a week. You can still trip across a copy of the Pioneer Press, you know, at certain bars. I wish it was more places, but it's still there, still landing on the governor's doorstep or the mayor's doorstep, in print and online. So, you know, I would say because there's fewer opportunities, you really have to stand out more. So get published as soon as you can. Get clips, make connections. And kind of always be hungry, always be writing. I write like tomorrow's my last day, and like my next my employment depends on getting a byline in. I write like I'm a freelancer and about to starve if I don't get this in. That mentality has never hurt me, even though I'm a full-time employee.
All right, very cool. Do you have any heroes? Any heroes of journalism? People you admire? Present or from the past?
Yeah, I think, you know, on staff, I mentioned I went to his funeral. I thought Ruben Rosario was a hero to so many people because he got so up close and personal with people. I mean, cops respected him. People who were felons respected him because he would sit down, you know, he had columns where he would take a person who was like convicted of child molestation, and he would go to with them to the movies to see a movie about like a redemptive child molester. and be like, is this possible? Is there ever redemption after this unforgivable crime? And I mean, like, you know, you're shaking as you're reading it because you're struggling with it in your head. You're like, I don't know that there is. But this guy said he was, and they went to the movies together, you know. And Ruben Rosario went as someone who had written about grappling with his history of having been molested. Hmm. So he wasn't just going like, oh, I'm a bleeding heart and I forgive everybody. He's like, I'm trying to find how to forgive my molester. Let me talk to this other guy.
Right.
I think he went to places other journalists could not go in their own heads.
Yeah.
Some of the Stark stuff. But I don't know. I mean, I went to high school with a young guy named Patrick Keefe, and he's written any number of books, true crime books. My family's just getting into them. Everything from, like, Chinatown Mobsters, Irish Republican Army, Say Nothing is the book we're reading now as a family. And they turned that into a whole TV series. I mean, he's just done an amazing job for himself.
We're at time. Fred, this was so much fun. People can find you at the Pioneer Press. It's Frederick Mello with a K. So it's Frederick C.K. Mello, M-E-L-O. He's on Twitter as well. I'll put a link to your Twitter account, your X account, in the show notes. We are Badmouth Theater Company. I'm Kevin Kautzman. This is Mari Sittner. Fred, what's your next story? What are you covering next?
Almost encampments. I'm
okay.
And the budget. And
all
the
right.
Budget.
What day is it? It's homeless encampment day. Okay, well, good luck. I hope your coverage can move the needle, and hopefully people can get the help they need. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Yeah, take care.